our bodies and minds adapt to what we do most of the time. If you want to change your body and mind, you must change what it is you do most of the time.
In part two of this extensive exploration of holistic health excellence, we asked Josh some fundamental but important questions: cardio versus strength, sleep, exercise, or nutrition, which order? Meat or vegetables or insects? Breakfast or fast? Cold showers? Why? Alcohol, good or bad? Chocolate or chips? Hydrogen peroxide? Ozone? Explain, and we ask Josh his advice for anyone wanting to get started improving their well-being on the simple steps he would recommend. And there's a lot more to enjoy in the second episode with Joshua J. Holland. So you talk about changing your body and your mind means changing what you do most of the time.
Yeah.
So that's obviously part of that assessment that you go through when you do this holistic health check. Or maybe it's not health check, maybe it's a broader attitude check.
Yeah, I call it an assessment.
Assessment, right, okay.
The assessment is, it's real time. Like, what assessment I put you through today may be a very different outcome than what you go through next week. Which means what? I should be doing assessments every time that we see each other. That's kind of what I do. So changing your body and mind is my mantra that I've used for years now. And it's actually on the signature of my emails. And it's something that I'm actually smiling when I'm talking about this, because I use it as a fallback for almost every situation. And if you really break down the mantra, the way I have it kind of written out is, our bodies and minds adapt to what we do most of the time. If you want to change your body and mind, you must change what it is you do most of the time. So the if almost needs to be capitalized, because there's some people who are like, yeah, but I don't want to really change my body and mind. So, okay, cool. No problem. If you are happy with how you are living and how you look and how you feel, okay. Why are you here? You want to just have some fun and hang out and work out? Let's go. But if you want to change your body and mind, then we have to figure out what is it you're doing most of the time that will allow us to create a variable that we can change. And so that becomes the exercise, so to speak.
And I suppose that is dependent on the goal that each individual states, whether it's looking better in their clothes or it's being able to do a half Ironman or whatever it might be, or just lose weight for a wedding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so they go hand in hand, because according to those goals and then according to what you're doing most of the time, I need to figure out, okay, how can we find the variable that we can tweak to adapt it to the goal that you really want?
So it's quite forensic.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've got a friend in the UK that's a lifelong ad guy, writer, but his last few years he's been embracing behavioral science and has done, I don't know if you're familiar with BJ Fogg, who's the head of behavioral science at Stanford. And
wow.
He's written, if you haven't read it, you should check out his Tiny Habits workshop, because what he does is he looks at what are the smallest things you need to do to change your habits, to change your lifestyle, address goals. I think there'd be a really interesting, you should go and check it out. I can send you a link to it. We'll put it in the show notes as well.
Please do.
Anyway, slight diversion. I just want to run through some just big questions with you. We've talked about people coming into 432 house and how you would look at them holistically. Sleep, diet, and exercise. What order do you put them in?
Exactly that order.
Right.
Sleep is the priority. Normally, if I had four, I would say I would lump sleep and recovery into the same one category.
Yeah.
And then consumption would be the next one. So that's, you could call that diet.
Yeah.
And then
it's a better word, actually, consumption.
Yeah. Yeah, and because I also treat how we consume, like our environment, like the pollution in the air.
Media.
Yeah, media.
Because that affects your sleep.
The energy of other people, all of that, right? And then the third piece, one that you didn't put there that I would include, would be movement. Because I don't always consider movement to be exercise, right?
Of course, yeah.
There's non-exercise movement, and then there's exercise movement is kind of what I think.
So sitting at desks, moving around.
You got it.
Okay. Maybe we'll tap into some of the specifics around these as we carry on. But let's just run through these big questions.
Okay.
Cardio or strength training?
Strength training. Easy.
What's most misunderstood between the two?
I think the thing that's most misunderstood is that everyone, not everyone, but many, many, many people think that getting your heart rate up constitutes cardio, therefore constitutes weight loss, therefore constitutes good health. False, false, false.
Given that maybe some people in listening to the podcast might not have a good sense of the specifics of the benefits of strength, my understanding is that as you increase your strength training, your metabolic rate goes up, which means you burn more body fat, which means also your heart rate goes up as well. If you're certainly doing any sort of form of strength training, that is going to push up your heart rate as well, which will have a cardio benefit. Yeah. So there is presumably some crossover between the two.
That's right. And there's a lot of truths to what you just mentioned. It's the fact that we are able to preserve or even increase, slightly increase lean muscle tissue is what increases our basal metabolic rate. So that's the rate at which we burn while at rest, mm-hmm. right? And then the cardiovascular component happens whether we're doing movement or not. The fact that our heart rates, our hearts are beating and pumping blood in and out of the limbs of our bodies and through the arteries and veins means that we're doing cardio right now. So what people really think that they're trying to do, though, is improve maybe the stroke volume. And that's how much blood can be pushed in and pulled in and pushed out throughout each heartbeat, mm-hmm. right? And then heart rate variability is the spacing and timing between each heartbeat, which if it's too constant, that means we're in a state of sympathetic nervous system response, which is fight or flight. But if it's erratic, that's actually a good thing. That means we're nice and calm, uh-huh. right? And so you can train yourself to become, even while doing strength training, if you work on your breathing and you work on all these things, you can make your heart rate very low. You know, like I have a resting heart rate in the low 40s. On a broader level, that just says that I'm someone who's in good cardiovascular health, right? Because I have a good low resting heart rate. At the same time, like my VO2 max is pretty high because I can pull in a lot of oxygen because my body, because I train with oxygen. I actually have an, you know, exercise with oxygen therapy machine. So there's a ways you can tweak all this stuff, but the reason why I say strength over cardio is because you can get that quote unquote cardiovascular type training while doing strength if you just cut down the rest in between exercises and you do high intensity intervals. Mm-hmm. So that's a, you know, hit out of the ballpark for me.
This is true for some guys, that particularly runners I've trained with, that avoid strength because they think it's going to put on muscle bulk and slow them down. And I've also got a lot of friends that are female friends that avoid strength training because they think it's going to put on muscle bulk.
Oh,
which
boy.
I think is a big fallacy. Would you like to explode that myth?
Okay. For all the runners out there, I say this one a lot. So people who know me know exactly what I'm about to say, but there's an analogy that I use quite frequently. And I want you to all visualize this. We're not talking about just the average runners now. Okay. I want you to think of the top 10 world's elite marathon runners.
Mo Farah. One being one of them.
Right. Absolutely. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now let's say the person that's listening right now, you happen to become the coach of those top 10. If you want all of them or any of them to get faster, what do you tell them to do?
Well, me knowing a bit about running, I would say you're not going to get them running more miles. You're going to get them doing speed work and you're going to get them lifting weights because you're going to put up their power to weight ratio.
There you go. But the key component is you can't tell an elite runner to run faster because Mo Farah is running as fast as he can, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So the only way you can even hope to get them faster is to get stronger. Power to weight ratio is very important, but more important than anything is power. You've got to get stronger. So if you don't weight train, in fact, if you put all 10 of those elite athletes, or you can go 100 or 1,000 or whatever, and you put them on a strength training program, their body types don't change. Why? Because they're still doing the same thing that they do all the time anyway, which is run, right? So they don't automatically become Usain Bolt unless they train like Usain Bolt, who trains for shorter distances and trains a lot of power. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
It's an easy one.
Next one. Breakfast or fast?
Fast. That's an easy one. Anyone who knows me, fast.
All right. So why do you say fast and not breakfast?
Great question. When talking about breakfast, many people understand or have a certain idea of what breakfast is, mm-hmm. right? What is your idea of breakfast?
Well, my breakfast has changed over the years. It used to be Rice Krispies, a couple of slices of toast and jam. It moved into having bagels and salmon. It's been cheese. And then it's been, and more recently, it's been nothing in the morning except coffee until probably about 1 o'clock. And then breakfast for me is spinach, eggs, tomatoes, and maybe a bit of bacon.
So you just hit the nail on the head. You basically just answered what I was about to explain, which breakfast needs to be understood as what it really is, why it was truly called breakfast, which is breaking fast. Mm-hmm. So anytime you go on a long period of not eating food and then you eat food, that's what breaking your fast is. Not this, oh, breakfast is always in the morning at a certain time, having certain foods, right? You go to a place, it says serving breakfast all day. And I kind of laugh to myself because it's like, well, yeah, anytime a person's breaking their fast, it should be all day, of course, right? And then it shouldn't constitute what that food is just because you're having it in the morning or just because that's how you grew up eating it. So that's why I chose fasting, because break fast is just breaking the fast. So, you know, they kind of go hand in hand for me. Mm-hmm. That's why that one's an interesting question.
I suppose it's also the amount of time between. I mean, if you eat your... I mean, I know from when I was growing up, my mother would never serve food after about 6 o'clock at night. In Scotland, it's called your tea time. It's not called your dinner. And you get served up your food at that. And then you might get a glass of milk before you go to bed. And then you get your breakfast in the morning. So you're going probably 6 at night till 7, 8 in the morning. So you're probably going 13, 14, which is probably a decent fasting period.
It is. It's
so in a way, it doesn't. But then if we look at our current lifestyles, well, I'll often now won't eat until, particularly living in New York, you could be out 10 o'clock at night and having a hearty meal. You don't want to be eating at 8 in the morning.
Absolutely. But see, this is the thing. When you grow up, when you're a young kid, chances are you have less options. Whatever's on the table is there. Mm-hmm. And you can either eat it or you don't.
Absolutely.
You know, you may have woken up in the middle of the night to go into, you know, rummage through the fridge or into the cabinets to get food, maybe.
Might have found myself with a bit of a sort of a red backside.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Get your hands out of there.
Right. Exactly.
Get back to bed.
Yeah. So, you know, as a kid, you know, you probably think twice about even doing that. You may not do it. As an adult, we're kind of forced to always push the envelope to try to get more, squeeze more minutes out of our day. And so anytime beyond sunset, when the lights go down, anytime that we're sort of forced to stay awake or to stay up and alert and active mentally, mm-hmm. the more that our bodies required, it requires more food to be able to sustain that. Because let's not get it wrong here. Our brains do burn calories. And every time we're forced to think or to use our brains, we are burning calories. So if you want to operate at a high level, then you probably need to fuel it. So, you know, there's many people who work 9 to 5, you know, they probably push that to 8. They want to work out afterwards, and they obviously need to fuel themselves after they work out, and then they have to check their emails and they have to prepare for their big meeting the next day. So they're staying up till midnight, and then, you know, having to wake up in the morning to maybe crank out another workout, right? So they're working up early. So you never really got a chance to fully recover. So the body's always kind of starving for fuel because you're just pushing it. But if you can learn to work smart or work efficiently or work intelligently with your actual work, but then also with your lifestyle, then things start to become very clear and very easy. Simple. Not easy. Never easy, but simple.
Just a question related to that sort of recovery and when you eat after exercise. I mean, if you don't eat after exercise, you're going to continue burning calories. But other people say, no, you have to eat right after exercise from get protein in you, 150 milligrams of protein within an hour or half an hour. What's your guidance on that?
Okay. There's many rules of thumb with that. My sort of recent offering and advice is to understand, again, it goes back to what are your goals, okay? Because if you're trying to just lose as much weight as possible and you don't care if you waste away your muscle, which is not healthy, but if you don't care about that, you just want to hit a goal on the scale, then yeah, don't eat after you train. But
it will damage your muscle.
Potentially. Well, yeah, well, of course, because any kind of exercise is muscle damaging. It's the what we do after exercise, how we recover, is what gives us the physiological benefits from exercise. So everyone should understand that. Like, exercise is micro damages to our muscular system, right?
The stresses you're putting on it,
exactly,
which allows you then to recover.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And hormetic stress, yeah, and all that stuff. So now, my current advice, though, is if you're doing cardio training, you know, you're not really asking your muscles to deplete the glycogen stores within the muscles. So you're probably fine. You're probably okay to go a little longer and continue fasting after training, after cardio type training, quote unquote cardio, like we talked about before. But if you're doing strength training, I highly suggest taking in some amount of healthy carbs and healthy protein after a training session, after a weight training session or a strength training session, because you need to be able to fuel the muscle so that they can optimize performance. Because if you're going to ask your body to continue performing at a high level, whatever that level is for you, but a high level for you, then you need to give it the fuel that it needs.
Okay. Didn't ask you, when do you have your breakfast and how many times a day do you eat?
So I typically don't eat anything in the morning. And so I'll give you kind of a quick run through of my 24-hour day. So usually at night, I am well finished and digested all of my dinner by 9 o'clock. So that means I'm usually eating dinner around 8:15. Takes me 20-30 minutes to eat, 20-30 minutes to digest. So I kind of start my fasting clock, my fasting window, at around 9 each night. And I'm asleep by 11. So I'm sleeping for a good 7 to 8 hours. What I usually do is some light movement in the morning, just kind of shaking like a dog, you know, getting all the stress out of the joints, you know. Maybe do a quick little 10 pull-ups in the bathroom door or push-ups or something. And then because I've fasted overnight, I allow that time to be the time when my BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that is a chemical that's released that really brings about like focus and creativity. And basically, you're smarter at the end of a long fast, right? Not to say that sleeping overnight is the end of a long fast, but we're creeping up to like a good amount of time fasting, right? Because if I stopped at 9 and I go, you know, I wake up and I'm going till 8 or 9 in the morning, that's getting close to a 12-hour fast. That's the time for me to take in a lot of brain-intensive work.
That's why a lot of people find, particularly writers, are very productive in the morning.
You got it. And that's because it's the end of the fast, and that's when the BDNF kicks in. So that's when I do my Duolingo, right? I'm practicing my Spanish. Yep. That's when I do all of my important emails. That's when I'm doing all of my plotting things out for the day. It's in the morning while I'm fasted. Once I complete all of that, then I go and prepare my coffee, and I just make simple, I mean, of course I do drink water and do all these things, but I will definitely do just black coffee and cinnamon. And then I kind of prepare my bags for the day, go to work, and then I won't eat until I feel like I need to eat, which might be around 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
And you won't snack on anything in between, like nuts or anything? Nothing? Completely straight through?
No, and it's completely straight through. And I will say this. I don't think I mentioned this before, but there was a while for years, I used to feel that waking up and having a bulletproof coffee, which is, you know, butter and MCT oil and things like that. I did that for years. And then I toned that back or toned it down. And then I started making some tweaks here and there. And then sometimes I would do just coffee and whey protein. And then I went for a while just doing coffee and collagen. And then I started thinking, well, wait a minute. Like, what's the point of that? Like, if I feel like I'm craving it, like all of this extra, these extra calories and extra bits of fat and collagen and protein and things like that in the morning, like what would happen if I didn't go with it? If I just did without it? And that's when I started to see all these crazy benefits. And it's funny because when I hit that like 12 or 13, 14 hour mark, it becomes so easy for me to continue going. Mm-hmm. Like yesterday, I think I did 18 hours and I only ate because I wanted to have a conversation with one of the guys that works with me at 432 House. And I wanted to just have a sit down dinner with him.
So what will you eat if you're not going to wait all the way through to 8 o'clock at night? You'll have something in between. What would you naturally normally have?
I would have a salad with protein. Mm. Yeah, super simple. Salad with protein or some sort of like, again, it depends on what day it is for me.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be strength training, then my fasting window is shortened, or you can look at it as my feeding window, like the amount of time that I eat, my feeding window will be extended. So on average, I have a feeding window of about 6 hours, which means I'm doing approximately on average about an 18 hour fast. But on training days or weight training days or strength training days, if you want to call it that, then I might do a 16 hour fast and have an 8 hour feeding window because I know that I need to have a good amount of nutrients before, during, and after that weight training session because I'm going to go hard.
You talked about coffee. Bulletproof, the Finnish company Four Sigmatic, or another type of coffee?
Kion Coffee.
Kion Coffee. Not heard of that. What's that?
Kion Coffee is the brand by Ben Greenfield.
Yes.
Very, very...
I've heard him interviewed.
Intelligent. Yeah. He's intelligent, talented athlete, and I really look up to him. I've never met him, but I've listened to a lot of his podcast and a lot of the research he's done. And a lot of what I've discovered has come from him either highlighting it or indirectly through him. Like I may have, you know, seen someone's research because he may have mentioned one thing and then I see another. But I was very close to saying Four Sigmatic because I do like Four Sigmatic. The only thing about Four Sigmatic is that it's an instant coffee and you're not always guaranteed on the quality of an instant coffee. I do like the mushroom.
The chaga mushroom.
Yeah, like the mushroom component, uh-huh. Right? Like they have this new one that's an adaptogenic mushroom coffee blend. I always have that on me, you know, especially while I travel. It's nice to have it in one of those little packs and it's easy to travel with.
Yeah.
The other, like the Kion coffee is really good. It's probably literally the cleanest coffee you can find. Okay. Hands down.
We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
When I hear the term cold showers, it takes me back to when I was at boarding school for some time when I was younger and I was misbehaved. People get the wrong impression of me. I wasn't that bad. But it would be a prefect would say, right, get your arse out there and run around the fields early in the morning in your kilt and then into the cold showers where they would stand and basically force you into those cold showers. And that was not pleasant in any way. Wow. So my memory of cold showers is probably not the experience of cold showers that you have or other people like the
Wim
Dutch
Hof.
Guy. Wim Hof, yeah. So talk to me about cold showers and their benefits.
Yeah, so, you know, unlike your traumatic experience with cold showers.
But maybe it made me a better runner in the end.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
You never know. Maybe.
There's a lot of benefit to cold showers. And, you know, the easiest ones for me to explain is the recovery, like muscle recovery or just recovery in general. Many of us know that it's important to put ice on a bruise or sore muscles, you know, get a massage and things like that. But for me personally, when I'm really sore, like maybe after doing an EMS session or playing 2 hours of basketball, like I really crave getting into a cold shower. Mm-hmm. Now, I do have to give a slight caveat here because anytime I talk about cold showers, I always have people ask me, yeah, but man, like I sometimes I just like to have like a nice warm shower. I'm like, oh, no. Like yeah, I do as
finish,
well.
I just finish with the
cold shower, you know, or you give yourself kind of the mixture, like that variety, almost like the hot bath component where you get into a hot bath and then a cold bath and a hot bath. So you can create that, but there's so many benefits from recovery to fat loss to improved hormone secretion. Yeah. I mean, all so many things that you can get out of it.
Okay.
And it's also a really good way to just see how tough you are.
That's true. You just laid down the challenge to me there, Josh. I'm going to be... No, the interesting thing is I've got a friend that does cold showers, and she said that the technique is to take the shower. If you've got a shower that you can remove from the wall, is start with your ankles and work your way up, rather than getting the shock treatment of your shoulders if you're not as tough as Josh.
Oh, I go full blast. I
just go straight in there.
First of all, mine doesn't come off. So because if you know me, you know I don't have just a normal shower head. So I've installed an ozone generated shower head.
Great.
So, okay. I literally went to the hardware store, bought an ozone machine from this company. I forget the name of the company, and put the tubes together, connected it to the hose. And so I have ozone filtrating through my water. So I have ozone water coming out of my shower head. But when I turn it cold, it's just pointing right at my face, and it's just that I want that right on my face.
I can't remember who I heard say this. it was a Navy SEAL or someone just saying that it's all a lot to do with your attitude as well. You go, bring it on.
Yeah.
It's preparing you for that battle moment of going, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah. Have you ever sat at the edge of a pool or, you know, body of water and just kind of dip your toe in?
Yeah.
It's agonizing when you do it that way.
Yeah, and no, you just got to dive straight
just
in.
Just jump
you
in do. There.
No, I'm with you. Okay, cold showers, here we come. morning regime. Hydrogen peroxide?
Yeah. I have it in my bag here.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So hydrogen peroxide. I used to use hydrogen peroxide when I was a young boy. It was only 1%. It's the kind that you put on the scrapes and cuts and things like that. Yeah. And I used to be fascinated when I would see it bubble up. Right. So like I would put it on everything. And it also has this weird smell to it, you know. And then throughout my research on molecular hydrogen, water and ozone water and things like that, I started to discover the benefits of hydrogen peroxide, and it essentially has the same sort of chemical action as ozone and as molecular hydrogen in the body. So it, essentially it's creating oxygen. So what I do is I get a 35%, which is very, very potent. Okay. 35% food grade hydrogen peroxide. If I was to bring that in here right now and drop it on you, it'd burn your skin. Okay, it would make it go white and it would hurt. I'm not drinking that, obviously. Otherwise, I don't know what I would be doing if I was drinking that. I probably wouldn't be here. But I dilute a few drops into water and then I drink that. And it's basically the ultimate cleanser, you know? Now, I definitely will state this. Don't just go out there and try this, guys, because I've done a lot of research on doing it. I've worked with clients on doing this. It is helpful. It can be helpful, but you want to make sure you ease yourself into it and just read upon it. Like in this day and age, we have so many resources out there to just go and dive into the research. So do it. Go. Don't just trust some guys talking on a podcast about hydrogen peroxide, but there are loads of benefits. Loads of benefits.
Okay. A lot of what we're talking about takes time, money, resources, and dedication. What would you advise people who are just maybe starting out and want to dip their toe in and start? Or even, yeah, let's just say, where would you advise people to start if they haven't had a coach, if they're thinking about looking at a much more holistic benefits to their health and lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a very,
I know it's
good
tricky
question.
Because everyone's different, and I know you have to look at people on an individual basis, but of the things that people could do to get started, what would you recommend?
I think the easiest way for me to answer that question is to go back to my mantra. Our bodies and minds adapt to what we do most of the time. If you want to change your body and mind, you must change what it is you do most of the time. So when you use that as sort of a basis, and then you understand what it is you're looking for, then using that mantra can kind of help you to find ways to figure out what it is that you want to do. Going and getting a coach may not even be part of what you need to change, because maybe you already do have a coach, and maybe that is the one thing you do need to change, because you have a coach 5 days a week, or you work out you know, 7 days a week. Well, there's the variable we need to find and take away or change. Without having to spend any extra money on anything, I think many of us need to get outside more.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one of the first things I would suggest is just to get outside more. And with that, get outside more barefoot. Okay. We need to connect and reconnect ourselves to the earth. We are more disconnected from the earth's energy, and this is going to sound very esoteric and very woo, but we have been more disconnected from the earth than ever. So if you think about that, there's a lot of correlations, right? I'm not saying that that is the cause, but that has to be a factor. Mm-hmm. You know, from the moment that we can walk, we've got rubber on our soles, so we're insulated from the earth's electromagnetic field.
No, I think it's also, even if you go for, I mean, I feel different when I run in Central Park, if I run, or Hyde Park in London, or Hampstead Heath, or the Meadows in Edinburgh, from just running around the streets on concrete.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether I got rubber under my feet or not, it's just being closer to that nature.
You got it. Sense. You got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Meat or vegetables?
That's maybe a tough one. I'd if I had to choose, I would say vegetables.
Mm-hmm. What's your view on insects, like eating crickets and things like that? Because a lot of people in the world do eat and survive on insects.
Protein. I've eaten many. Yeah, yeah. I've had a plethora of insects. Yeah. In fact, when I was in Helsinki, I remember on tour there was a health food store that had a variety of crickets, and I bought a bunch and I remember posting it on my Instagram. I was going to trick the restaurant, because I was at this restaurant, this like Italian restaurant, and I was going to like play a trick on them, you know, and like put a cricket on like on the pizza that I ordered or whatever. And I decided not to in the end because I didn't want to freak them out. But yeah, I've definitely had crickets, and I know they have cricket protein bars and a lot of cricket stuff.
Yeah, I like
now.
Those cricket protein bars. They're great.
Good.
But the meat, obviously there are environmental considerations as well that we have to think about in terms of meat consumption.
With meat consumption and with vegetable consumption. And this is the reason why I hesitated on answering it, because people will easily say, oh, I'll be a vegetarian, I'll eat vegetables, and think that they've made the healthiest choice they could ever make. But I mean, let's not forget that there's glyphosate sprayed on all of this stuff.
What's glyphosate?
Glyphosate is like Roundup, right? Like a weed killer.
Even organic?
Oh yeah. If you've got a lot that's being sprayed with weed killer to the west, and you've got an organic farm to the east, and the wind blows, what do you think happens with the weed killer?
Yeah.
It gets everywhere. Mm-hmm. In fact, you can test the water. You can test all of our urine. We all have it in our systems. I don't care how clean you are.
Okay. And what about, I heard you mention another podcast interview about some form of sludge.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and what's that? I don't want to horrify listeners and I'm freaking out myself about this sludge and organic food.
I mean, look, I don't want to scare anyone and go into fear mongering, but I only want to make people aware that just because you're eating vegetables only does not make you automatically a healthy person. You still have to take precautions even with your vegetables, just like you have to take precautions in eating meat. I eat meat, but I only eat meat when I can get real good quality meat. So if I don't get good quality meat, hello, I've become a vegetarian. I was vegetarian for 3 years. That was probably one of the worst times of my life in terms of health. That's what got me to where I am today, because I discovered that I had a gluten allergy. I discovered I had all these gut issues because I changed something in my diet, which I took out meat, but I started consuming more gluten. I started, you know, consuming all these things. I wasn't cooking my green leafy vegetables. I was eating them raw. And so, you know, I was exposed to all these other like defense mechanisms that the vegetables put out as well.
Yeah, people forget that.
Yeah.
About having raw, don't know if it's not spinach, but a certain green.
Yeah, spinach,
leaf.
Yeah, spinach, kale, chard.
Yeah. Better cooked than uncooked.
Yeah.
Just at this point, because you mentioned the gut, obviously we know about the brain blood barrier, but there's also the gut gut-brain barrier.
Yeah.
Can you just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so the gut is known as the second brain for a reason, right? And so there are certain things that can bypass the gut barrier. And so there are certain things that you want to bypass the gut barrier, like certain things like vitamins and nutrients and certain things. You want them to bypass the gut barrier so that they can get to their destination.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are certain foreign substances that you don't want, right? Certain things that are problematic and you don't want those to go beyond the gut barrier. But if you have a leaky gut, or what's also known as gut permeability, then some of these foreign substances or problematic substances will get beyond the gut-brain barrier into the immune system and wreak havoc. And this is when inflammation starts to occur. This is when the body starts to fight against itself, because we call it autoimmune disease, right? So your body's fighting against itself because it doesn't know what's going on. Why are these things getting through? It's because there's a gut permeability or a leaky gut. So
what can people do about that?
So one of the best ways is to figure out what's going on with your gut, right? Mm-hmm. To figure out like what foods are problematic, what things are causing you sensitivities. If you have, are you always bloated after you eat a certain thing? Do you always need to belch or have gas when you eat certain things? Are your when you go to the toilet, are your stools irregular and runny? Are you constipated? Like, there's a lot of things that you can figure out, because the gut is kind of the center of our health. So one of the other strategies is to go on an elimination diet, kind of just take out everything, or fasting. Well, first of all, fasting is one of the best ways to help heal the gut, for one, because with fasting, you're allowing your body to not have to deal with digestion, and it can deal with all the other important things that it needs to do. This is why fasting is good for us. And people will always say, yeah, but I thought we were supposed to have small meals throughout the day. Well, if you want to tax your system, sure, do it. And that assumes that you have the luxury to be able to do so. How about telling some kid in Africa, hey, you're supposed to eat 10 small meals a day, little guy. He's going to look at you and like, yeah, right. So fix your gut. Fasting helps. An elimination diet helps. An elimination diet is not as scary as it sounds, but it's just kind of getting rid of all the potentially known problematic foods, stripping it down to just vegetables, and then adding things back in slowly but surely to see how they affect you.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is to go and get a product like Viome with a V, V-I-O-M, Viome as in Victor. Viome does a poop sample or a gut sample. So they send you this kit, you take a poop sample, you send it in, and they send you back all of this information about like what foods are affecting your system. It's not for life, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like here's one time and this is what you should not have for the rest of your life, but this is this period of time.
Moment in time, yeah.
And usually our guts change within the season. Okay, so this is why eating seasonally is also very important. Our gut microbiome is going to change 2 or 3 times throughout the year. That means we should probably be testing our gut sample 2 or 3 times a year. Now, yes, that can get expensive, but if you're someone like me, it's very important. Also, if you're only having 1 or 2 meals a day, it's a lot easier to figure out where to make the tweaks, mm-hmm, rather than having 6 meals a day and like, well, yeah, but yesterday I had X, Y, and Z. I don't know what caused this issue.
But that must be tough for you when you're on tour.
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. I mean, to be fair, I did not do this stringent of a fasting protocol, because remember, I thought I was fasting, but I was doing the like coffee with collagen and protein and things like that. But yeah, I traveled with all that stuff. I always travel with my coffee grinder and my whole coffee beans, and I grind my own coffee in the morning, and it becomes part of my routine. I mean, I was only having to choose 1 meal a day to go out and eat.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Because I would have my coffee in the morning, I'd have snacks throughout the day, like after my period of fasting or whatever, quote unquote fasting. And then I would have to just, what am I having for dinner? I just had to choose what I was having for dinner. And that was it. It's super easy.
The question of alcohol. Don't tell me none, please. Or red wine, come on, a little bit. I mean, you hear so many conflicting views on alcohol. I mean, all these film movies you can watch out there about it as well. What's your view?
Okay, alcohol is a poison. It's simply that. Now, am I here on this podcast to say don't drink alcohol? Never. I would never say to anyone, don't do anything. But where are you on your spectrum of wanting to get in health, in good health, or
but
good
shape? If I was going on a tour of the world, mm-hmm. and I said, hey, Josh, come along with me, you'd be saying, Mark, listen to me. No red wine at night. I know the facts about it affecting your ability to go into that REM sleep, or the two types of sleep you go into. And I think
several
have,
types. Yeah.
When you have alcohol at night, you never go into that deep
restorative. Yeah.
Restorative sleep.
Okay. I don't want to be too general here, but I will be general. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is a toxin, period. So alcohol is a toxin. If that's true, which it is, then how fast or at what point does your body start to decide to deal with the toxin that's coming in or everything else? And so we call it first to burn. There's a process called first to burn. Mm-hmm. And alcohol is going to be the first to burn. So in a triage situation, the body's going to deal with the most detrimental to your health or detrimental to the organism, you know, the host that is, it's going to deal with the most detrimental thing first. That's why it's probably going to disrupt your sleep, because your body's not trying to help you go into sleep and repair all these other things when you have alcohol to deal with. Your body is trying to deal with that toxic substance that keeps coming into itself all the time, right? Mm. So here's the other part about that. So not only does it potentially disrupt your sleep, but anything you consume in conjunction with alcohol gets stored until the alcohol is dealt with.
Ah.
And how long do you think that takes?
Probably a good few hours, you're going to tell me.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say 6 hours plus. It's going to take some time to get rid of, because obviously it depends on how much you have, right? But we're not talking minutes here.
The simple answer is, if you want a glass of red wine, don't have it with a nice big juicy burger at the same time at 10 o'clock at night.
No. I mean, like dead serious. Like the body cannot deal with trying to protect you and filter out all this toxic substance of alcohol. Mm-hmm. It can't deal with that and digest your food and send it into the right places it needs to go at the same time.
Is that why you hear a lot of people say that you shouldn't be drinking water when you're eating? You should either drink well before or well after.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, of course there's going to be situations where people are going to say, yeah, but research says this. And okay, sure. But this is what I've experienced, and this is what I've found. And I personally do not drink alcohol. Have I drank alcohol? Of course. You know, I've drank alcohol before, and there may be times that I might be tempted, but I sure as hell won't do it near sleep. Mm-hmm. And I definitely won't be eating anything that's going to compromise the digestion at that point in time. So if I'm going to have alcohol, I need to say to myself, well, why am I having it? Mm-hmm. Because I am a happy-go-lucky all-the-time person anyway, right? I know how to make myself happy all the time. I would prefer to have CBD or something like that as opposed to alcohol.
We're going
to
come on to talk about that.
Perfect.
Moisturizer. What you put on your skin and what you put in your hair. How important?
Okay. This is a good question. I'm glad you brought this up, because not a lot of people ask this, at least in the media. People ask me all the time in person, but I'm someone who prides myself in having good skin and good hair and things like that. But honestly, I don't put anything on my face.
Nothing.
Or I guess on my skin either. And that's also the reason why I've
gone
to...
It's probably a lot to do with your diet as well.
Definitely has a lot to do with the diet. That's for sure.
We should use the word consumption.
Right. Yeah. I don't want people to think that, you know, I can just eat whatever and then have clear skin. Uh-huh. So yes, you're right. They go hand in hand. But I noticed that anytime I put something on my face, because the face is like the easiest to see, right? But on my face or on my skin, I noticed that the body was having a hard time dealing with it. So my face and my skin is very sensitive to chemicals. And even to like like perfumes and things like that. Like when I'm in the airport, if I smell, like, you know, you walk through duty free mm-hmm. area and you smell that perfume, like I almost get a headache. Essential oils I'm fine with, you know, like diluted essential oils. So that's what I typically put on. I put on essential oils as far as like smells go or for certain ailments. But the thing that I put on my skin the most would be either coconut oil, moringa oil, or ozonated oils. So any kind of ozone-infused oils, I'm good with. Clearly, I'm a fan of ozone. So, you know, there's a company called Puro 3, spelled P-U-R-O-3. I love their company because they have a lot of great products. I even have one of, a couple of their ozone-generating devices and things like that. But they make, like, ozonated hemp oil. They make sunflower seed oil, avocado oil, all kinds of stuff. So I don't mind putting their products on my skin mm-hmm. because it's ozonated and
what,
it's
good. What about Mother
quality.
Dirt? Have you heard of that?
Brian? I have. Yeah, I used to use it.
Experimenting with that.
What turned me off was having to keep it refrigerated.
Yeah, it's... You forget about it if it's not in the bathroom.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Serious question. Sugar, chips, crisps, things are just snacking, you know, that people love to have and hard not to have when you're feeling a wee bit under pressure or the deadline at work or a paper to submit or a podcast to prepare for. Yeah. Just grab that Snickers or a pack of crinkle cut organic chips, you know? Mm-hmm. What's your view?
Do away with all of it.
All of it? Done.
Yeah.
Gone.
What about
sort of organic raw cacao or at least 80% dark chocolate?
Again, it goes back to what are you really trying to do? Like, well, you know, what is your goal in that certain situation? And then remember, if you really do want to perform cognitively at your highest, you should probably just fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
or have nuts.
Yeah. But anything that comes in, that gets introduced to the body during a time of fasting or a time you're breaking your fast, the body, it becomes a distraction, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's feeding into the ego, and the ego is what wants the food.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's really plain and simple. So if you don't feed it, now the true you gets a chance to focus and not worry about, hey, man, hey, feed me. Like, there's a store across the street and it's, you know, 5 o'clock and you always eat at 5 o'clock. Come on, bro. But if you tell it to shut up, you don't feed it, then you're not feeding your ego. And that's deep because you don't truly need it. The body can go weeks without food.
Well, we know that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, getting towards the end here. We've covered meat, sugar, alcohol, ozone. You talk a lot about ozone. Can you just explain it briefly and the benefits of it?
Yeah. I mean, ozone, the easiest way to explain it is what we get, as in the planet gets when there's lightning and thunderstorms. It's kind of the way that our planet is cleansed. And so I think without lightning and without ozone, first of all, the ozone layer protects us from being just burned to death, right? But then also every time that there's a thunderstorm, that's what's cleansing the earth, so to speak, right? So to be able to harness or to make ozone, it's another oxygen atom that is, so it's just, it's O3, right? That's why that company is called Pure O3. Mm. So that third oxygen molecule makes it sort of radical in a way. It's just kind of, that third molecule is kind of bouncing around trying to attach to other molecules that need that third molecule or that needs another molecule, right? It needs an attachment site. And so what that does is it basically gets rid of, ozone gets rid of any sort of bad cells or bad bacteria because it's so volatile because it's, they call it radical. So it's a radical molecule that's just kind of...
Not free radical.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going all over the place. And it's sort of consuming or eating up or getting rid of any sort of bad cells, bad bacteria. So that, in a nutshell, that's kind of the, I think, the easiest way for me to explain what ozone is. And then how you harness that and how you utilize that can be, can determine if that's beneficial for you or not.
Okay. And you put it in your water in your shower and...
Yeah, so I infuse it in my water, infuse it in my shower. I also, like, let's say I have mold, maybe, like, let's say if there's mold in my apartment or in an area that I'm in, I will blast it with ozone for an hour or so while I'm not in the room, because you don't want to breathe it in directly, because it can be harmful to the lungs. It won't feel good. But I've gone as far as having ozone injection, like the gas of ozone injected into my veins. I've done that several times, to where now it's less invasive just for me to do what's called an ear insufflation. I've done rectal insufflation. I've done, I just recently posted on my Instagram stories, I did a ozone body bag.
Oh, I thought you were going to say your rectal one was bone put Instagram stories.
I keep my rectum off of the internet.
Don't be sharing that one, Josh.
Definitely keep it away from the internet. But I do these things because I like to try to push the needle in one way or the other, if it can help me and if it can help others. And because we have social media today, I think it's a good outlet to motivate others and encourage others. But I think we need to be wise in how we use it.
And where, just as a matter of interest, if someone wanted to experiment, where would they read about it and where would they buy it?
I would definitely suggest puro3.com. And there's a lot of resources there, lots and lots of information. And I've listened to documentaries, podcasts. I've read several books on ozone. So if you go down the rabbit hole after looking up puro3.com, then you'll find it.
A couple of final things. Microdosing?
Yeah, I'm with it.
You're with it?
Yeah. The only thing I've microdosed with, or dosed with, if you will, is cannabis and CBD. And I've researched, like, endless amounts of research about cannabis and cannabidiol, which is CBD, and, you know, all the many different effects that you can use for pain and sleep and for mood enhancement, all sorts of stuff when it comes to CBD. So I'm a huge fan. And anybody who knows me, truly knows me, knows that I'm not one to just do it just to be high. I'm doing it to enhance and optimize my
performance. Yeah. Everything you do.
Yeah.
Just a question, that is that an Oura ring you've got?
It is an Oura ring, yes.
I was thinking about getting one. Because one of the other questions I skipped, actually, was about affordable health tech, things people could start with that would improve their quantified self and their ability to track their sleep, improve their environment. There's obviously a stack of tech out there. Not everyone's got the budget to go and buy it. What would you start with?
Okay, great question. I'm a huge fan of Oura. Spelled O-U-R-A, AuraRing.com. But to be quite honest with you, the fail-proof, super consistent, most beneficial tracking tool for me so far has been the Garmin Fenix, the watch that I have.
Oh.
So the Garmin Fenix 5. The Garmin Fenix 5X. And the reason is because I've been in cahoots, if you will, or been a fan of Oura for couple years now, but I've had to get it replaced a couple times already. And
is that the latest one, the 3 or whatever?
Their latest one. But I was in Germany just a few weeks ago and it just went on the fritz. Well, it's not like I can just get an Oura ring sent to me in Germany, because they have to go to your account, they have to, like, do troubleshooting, make sure that it is faulty, and then they'll send me a ring. But I was in Germany, the ring got sent to my home in New York here, and then I had to wait till I got back. So I missed 2 weeks of pure data.
Sleep data, yeah.
And it's important for me.
The thing, what aspect of it do you like the most?
The fact that it's very unassuming, and, you know, it's, I can do pretty much anything. That's the only downside to the Garmin Fenix, is the one thing that I love to do is play basketball. And it's advised not to play basketball with this on, because other people don't want to get scratched when I'm wearing it. People are like, Josh, bro, you got to take your watch off. But with the Oura ring, I play with it on. But everything else, you know, it's like I told you, I may have told you, I'm in the process of writing a book. So all this data for me is very important. You know, with my Garmin Fenix, I can swim in the open ocean and leave it on. I can surf and track it. I can, you know, stand up paddle. I can surf. I could do all these things and track it with the Garmin Fenix.
But that doesn't do sleep.
It does.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Oh, it does it all.
Right. I'm going to be getting one of those. Final couple of questions. This may be slightly tangential to you, but a lot of people believe in minimalism. Are you a minimalist?
Parts of my life, I'm a minimalist for sure. And other parts, no. I watched the documentary or the movie Minimalism, and I thought that was very cool and intriguing, and it did prompt my roommate and I to go out and just kind of get rid of a lot of stuff. Or I should say it prompted me, and then my roommate then was like, okay, yeah, I guess we're getting rid of stuff, right? So we're getting
Madonna t-shirts.
I think I kept those. No, but like, you know, there's like a lot of shoes, and both my roommate and I have been on several tours throughout our lives. So you accumulate things when you go around the world. And I just kind of was like, man, I need to get rid of some stuff. So I gave a lot of things away, and I would give it to people. And then I went to charity, gave it away. I never just threw anything away. Right. So I wanted to recycle it, but then I went on another tour. Right. And then the part of me that's not minimal is the gadget side of me, right? Where I'm going to have like every tool, gadget, and interesting thing that I can test and try. But in the other side of me, right? So like the fact that I don't have all these fancy suits and fancy shoes and fancy clothes to go out and party and go all to these fancy dinners and things like that, because I don't do that. You know, it's just not me. So I'm minimal in that aspect, but I do accumulate a lot of toys.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Mindfulness. Do you meditate?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
How many times a day?
So I never count and I never force myself. I just let it happen. And I like to kind of consider it flow state.
Yeah.
And because meditation is kind of like that whole breakfast idea we were talking about earlier. A lot of people have a certain idea of what breakfast is, and a lot of people have a certain idea of what they think meditation is or has to be. I think if you get to a point doing anything throughout your day that causes you or allows you to fully hone in and focus and be present in what you're doing, I consider that meditation.
All right, final point to wrap up, Josh. Hmm. You said you're writing a book. You've got your own podcast and you've got a ton of social media. So just quickly talk us through there if people want to follow you, read more about your thoughts.
Yeah. What's happening? Thank you for that. It's a great opportunity to plug here. So thank you. I think the easiest way to follow me and track what I'm doing is through my Instagram. My username there is @JoshuaJHolland. And J is my middle name. JAY is my middle name, but the handle is just the letter J. Yeah, so Joshua J. Holland. And that, luckily and fortunately for me, is the same across all of my social media platforms and my website and anything else you need to find me at. Just search Joshua J. Holland. As far as the book goes, there's a lot of things that I'm working on as far as like the title and things like that. And I'm at the very early stages of it. And I'm working with a ghostwriter because I want to sort of delegate that process of making it sound great and making.
You say what it's about?
Well, yeah. It's like a memoir. It's kind of like it's going to talk about my experience and how my experiential data, so to speak, working with a multitude of types of clients is what's going to dictate the advice that I'm going to be giving throughout the book. So it's going to be like part memoir, part here's a way to kind of figure out your own health and wellness and fitness and lifestyle. So, but there's going to be a lot that I can do with that. And I really, truly want it to be something that I want it to be a resource tool for my clients, my friends, my family, and anyone that is just kind of lost in this world of craziness when it comes to misinformation.
And if they want to listen to your podcast?
Yeah, and my podcast is @SimplyWalkTheTalk. And you can find that on iTunes or
Spotify.
Yeah, just search Simply Walk the Talk. Or go to simplywalkthetalk.com because I think we also use what's the other one? SoundCloud. Yeah, we use it on SoundCloud as well. Yeah.
That's great. I listened to an episode recently that I really enjoyed with William Pullen.
Mr. Pullen. Yeah, he's brilliant.
The running one, which was great.
Yeah, great guy.
Thank you, Josh. I know there'll be other questions, and maybe some months down the line we'll have to do a follow-up. But I really appreciate your time. I think over the two episodes you have been generous with your time and inspiring with your answers, with your knowledge, your incredible curiosity that drives your intellect and awareness and appreciation of all the things that most people don't have time to stay up to date with. So I really thank you for sharing all that with us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to all the listeners who made it this far.
Like, I know, these are long. Getting through part one and part two. Good one.
Yeah, thank you.
But you're better off for it. And don't crack open that bottle of wine. All right. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers, mate. Bye. Yeah.
Okay, folks, that's it for this week. If you like the show, please subscribe, and ideally give us a 5-star rating. Just go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or whatever podcast player you listen. And remember, stay curious, be creative, and be open to serendipity. See you next time.